We are doing session 9 today of a workshop, the Connections Program, for a spiritually based workshop for stress and depression, anxiety, and a whole bunch of other things. So last session, session 8, we talked about providing for other people's needs. And the previous one before that, we were talking about noticing other people's needs. The time before that as well, we were discussing this world of interpersonal connection, delving into the world of other people, noticing their needs, providing for their needs, and loving to provide for their needs. Something also we spoke about last week. And all of that is a foundation, a foundational experience in the world of interpersonal connection. But the next two sessions, today and next week, we're going to be going into a little bit of different territory. It's still interpersonal connection very much. But to the extent that we've been consistent with our behavioral activities and we're noticing other needs and we're providing others' needs, we have grown. And we've grown, we've grown in our love for other people, freeing ourselves from the shackles of self-centeredness. But we have to be aware of something. It's that you can master the art of noticing others' needs and providing for their needs, and we can really love other people like you love yourself, but people can be pulled into the world of disconnection, the world of interpersonal disconnection, and lose everything in a specific circumstance. And the specific circumstance, it's actually not even so specific. It's very general and it's very common. And that's when other people don't do things that that you like, when other people do things that go against your will. In other words, even if we have perfect intimacy and a connection with other people, and even if we notice other people's needs, we get into their world, we love doing it. Let's see if somebody who loves taking care of other people. But if we don't learn how to sustain our connection when we're under stress, when other people do things that elicit irritation or anger, then our connection could go out the window very quickly. It's going to be weak. And sessions 9 today and 10 next week are about this. They're about how to protect ourselves from disconnection. I want to introduce these two sessions with an overview, and then we're going to talk about today's aspect of it. Firstly, I want to define interpersonal disconnection. So there's a spectrum of how people can disconnect from others when other people do things that go against our preferences. On the one extreme, you have murder, where you want somebody has done something to you that you don't like so much that you actually want them out of the world permanently. A little bit down from that, we have causing injury or damage to them, permanent damage. Sometimes we don't want to cause them permanent damage, though. It's just pain, causing them physical pain. There are other things we can do, though, is we can refuse to see them ever again. We can cut them out. We can refuse to speak to them. Or we can speak to them, but not in a sincere way. We can just be fake about it. That's disconnection. People say, oh, look, I'm being civil, I'm being nice. No, that's disconnection. If you're not speaking to somebody in a sincere way, then what's happened is they've irritated you, they've upset you, and you've cut them out. Sometimes people speak sincerely, but they avoid eye contact. So they'll talk about something, but they have subtle ways. That's also a form of interpersonal disconnection. It's already fairly good. That's already a fairly high level, I would say, in this day and age. But nevertheless, let's be clear, that's a way of avoiding contact with somebody else. It's a way of getting somebody out of your world because you can't look at them. Sometimes people will speak while making eye contact, though, but they'll cut back on their time. They'll say, you know what, I'm just not going to call that person. And it's not because they have better things to do or don't like them. It's not because they have better things to do or other people they like more. It's that they actually don't like that person. They don't want to make them a priority anymore. I've had other situations. People are very generous, but they're not as enthusiastic as they used to be. In all of these kinds of situations, these are ways of engaging in interpersonal disconnection because the internal force that's driving the behavior is you're not doing what I want, so I'm not going to be as connected to you as I once was. Since you're not doing what I want, you're out of my world. In other words, interpersonal disconnection is defined as any behavioral manifestation, subtle or overt, of irritation or anger, and it doesn't matter how small that manifestation is, an observable action or a comment or a gesture that's motivated by a desire to disconnect from another person, to create a wall and to create less of a relationship with that person. That is interpersonal disconnection. Conversely, remaining connected means recognizing our disconnection or our tendency or our desire to have disconnection, guarding against that disconnection, and then continuing to bestow kindness when other people do things that are against our will. So again, three things: to recognize when we are disconnecting from others, even at low levels, to guard against that disconnection, to make sure that we don't go down the rabbit hole, and third, to continue to bestow kindness and to engage with other people even when they do things that we don't like. So in sessions 9 and 10, today and next week, we're going to be learning about how to recognize our own disconnection and to maintain connection when other people don't do what we like. Don't do what we like. They don't do what we want, or they do things that we don't like. In other words, these sessions are about learning how to deal with difficult people. Before we approach this, though, there are a couple of fundamental questions that a lot of people ask when they start being presented with this material. One of the reasons is because this is very different than a Western perspective on interpersonal relationships. I've never, in any of my training in Western psychology, come across a paradigm that says what I'm about to say. Okay, points number 1, 2, and 3. Three fundamental questions or points. Now, it's certainly disconnection to murder or to cause damage or pain. I think everybody would agree with that in the Western world anyway. But why does connection require holding back one's anger or irritation to continue to actually bestow kindness and love when other people do upsetting things? What's wrong with just putting a relationship on hold or telling somebody that you don't want to speak to them again? Or sending them a letter, even being clear with them, like, you know, sorry, you just can't call me again. I don't want to speak to you again. I don't want to speak to you for the time being. Well, the answer to this is as follows. The connections paradigm has very high standards, much higher standards than Western culture when it comes to intimacy and love and closeness. And that happens at the interconnection level. As we saw, there are a lot of aspects of it that are very high standards. Noticing when you're stressing your body out in terms of sleep is not something that in the Western culture we tend to do. And interpersonally as well, they're just higher standards. Now, both systems, the Western system and the connections paradigm, they agree at some point that there is something called interpersonal disconnection and there's a certain problematic conduct like murder. But by Western standards, there's nothing wrong with holding your love back from other people when they cause you irritation or pain. If you refuse to speak to anybody, because they did something that you don't like, they can't take you to court. There's nothing that they can do. The fundamental reason for this, though, is quite profound. According to the connections paradigm, the highest value on planet Earth is love. The goal of life is to love, to have closeness and to remain close. According to the Western culture, though, the highest value is happiness. And happiness has different forms. In New York, it's productivity in terms of money. In Boston, it's productivity in terms of honor. But in different cultures, it's different ways of achieving personal happiness. In the East, it's peace of mind, Eastern cultures. But bottom line is the connections paradigm is not pursuing happiness. We're pursuing connection and love. And the world of connection is known as the world of love, which I mentioned, I think, at the beginning of this workshop. So therefore, when it comes to interpersonal conduct, the most important thing is not how others make us feel. And it's not whether others are bugging us or whether others are getting in our way. It's how can we manage, well, actually, it's not. No, it's not how can we manage their behavior. The idea isn't to manipulate people or to change them and to maximize our own happiness or minimize our own inconvenience. The idea isn't just to get away with things without being gratuitously rude or to do something that's illegal. The goal is to give to people. The goal is to remain in that state of connection, to love them as we love ourselves, despite the stress and pain that we're being caused. To this end, if we're truly in love with other people and we really want to have a relationship with them, we won't pull back from our relationship when they cause us irritation or anger. Put it differently, in the world of connection, our top priority is to get close and stay close. Our personal sentiments of irritation or anger, they're secondary, and they take a back seat to this major purpose of life, which is intimacy, closeness, love, and connection. Just to bring this point home, think about the following example. Think about a newlywed couple, and they come home from their honeymoon even, and he is a total slob and she is a neat freak. And she's running late, and he says, no, I'm punctual. So they have these different levels of different ways in which they manifest organization and lack of organization. But they truly love each other. So when he leaves the toilet seat up, she's annoyed, and she might even say to him, sweetie, you left the toilet seat up, but she says, I love him, and she closes it, and that's it. She doesn't make a big deal about it. She's not upset about it. And she, when she's running late, he looks at his watch, and he says, okay, I wish you were on time. But he says, you know what? She's so cute. And he finds a way to occupy himself until she's ready. So thinking about this couple, I don't know about you, but I feel warm and fuzzy inside. I want to take notes on how they interact with each other and learn how to be a better person. And my heart melts thinking about these people. But if they were to exhibit even a little subtle, more aggravated sigh, she's running late and he looks at his watch and he's like, oh. You know, even if he smiles and he's nice to her afterwards, it wouldn't be a cute, it's not going to become a rom-com. It's not a romantic comedy. And if she, exhibits irritation or anger, then the same thing. It's going to take away from the movie if she makes a word of criticism or if he does. It's going to just detract from the subtle feeling of love. In other words, it's very clear that any behavioral expression of irritation is disconnection, because they would never end up on a Hollywood screen, because it would take away from the feeling of love. If you're a director and you wanted to choreograph what it looks like for people to love each other when they're irritated, you would never write in a sigh or a harumph or a word of criticism into the script. So if that's the case, then we all recognize what real love is. Okay, here's point number two. Does this mean that we have to bury our emotions? A lot of people ask me, so is my goal not to feel angry or irritated and I have to just bury that and tolerate it when other people are driving me crazy? Or is that a good thing? Is that healthy? Is that even from an interconnection standpoint, is that a healthy thing? Is it too much? So the answer to all of that is no. Maintaining connection does not mean that we don't feel anger. It doesn't mean that we don't feel irritation. It doesn't mean that we don't feel pain or that we pretend that we don't have negative emotions. That is not the idea. On the contrary, we're going to see later today even. The first order of business here is actually not to decrease but to increase our sensitivity to negative mood states when other people make us feel upset, to increase our awareness of disconnection. One of the goals here is to become more aware, not less, of how we feel when other people irritate us. As opposed to just ignoring it, and then all of a sudden it hits, and it's like this wave, rush of anger, and we lash out. That's how most relationships crumble. The idea here is to be aware of lower levels of irritation and anger and smaller behavior patterns on our part that exhibit that. Furthermore, we can feel extremely upset at another person inside. You can be full of anger inside, but very close and connected to that person. In fact, when we feel distress and we're upset at somebody, that's actually a great potential opportunity to take care of them, because most people, well, a couple things here. Number one is that most people feel more upset at people who they love than people who they don't love. If somebody who you love, somebody you care about, does something callous, then you're going to get upset much more than you would if a stranger does something which is callous. This is because the closer a relationship is, the greater capacity we have to be irritated. But a bigger point is as follows. When we feel emotion inside, that doesn't necessarily mean that we have to be behaviorally disconnected. As long as we want to connect to them, we can continue to give to them and to be kind and to serve them, if you will, even though we're feeling upset inside. Now, it might be important to tell them, hey, what happened the other day really took me aback, and I'm feeling very hurt by what happened. But it doesn't preclude the fact that we're feeling inside negativity and bitterness and anger towards a person does not preclude. In fact, in some ways, ironically, it's easier to connect to somebody because it shows that our discomfort and our pain is not going to be the deciding factor in whether we connect. If we continue to give to people anyway, when we're feeling discomfort and pain, we're sending the message to ourselves and to them that we love, that we value love more than we love happiness. And that in every way is connection. If you think about it, in fact, the best opportunities to create love are specifically when people drive you nuts. Continuing to give to other people when they irritate us is it's a straight shot because it sends the message to them and us again that life is for love. Life is not for happiness. To clarify, another thing is that numbness is not connection. The goal here is not to have a lack of feeling. It's to show people our love and our connection even when they show us irritation. By the way, this is the same by inner connection. The more our body lets down our soul, the easier it is for your soul to tolerate the body's idiosyncrasies with love and patience in some ways. So I'm not recommending that you all of a sudden befriend only people who irritate you because that'll drive you nuts. That's not the idea here. But the goal is to be able to get in to a mode of loving somebody even when they drive you nuts, irrespective of what they do for us. The third question that people ask, and then we'll get into the nitty-gritty of the session, does this mean that there's no place for providing feedback or expressing negative emotions or criticism? Because if all I have to do here is just take care of people and love them despite whether they're driving me nuts or not, then does that mean I never say what's going on? And the answer here, of course, is definitely and positively not. The goal here is not to swallow or suppress our concerns. Just as you'll recall, in the world of interconnection, when we express ourselves, when the body expresses itself to the soul, that creates connection. And here too, expressing oneself interpersonally creates connection. When we're upset and we find a way to convey that to the other, to somebody else, that is a gentle and sweet way in many cases of strengthening our connection to others, strengthening the relationship with them, and creating more connection and more love in the world. That's very different, though, from responding from a place of irritation or annoyance or anger or other negative emotions. I was dealing with a situation recently where a group of people ganged up on another person and just completely cut them out of the relationship. And when I started speaking to them about what was going on, speaking to the individual, figuring out a little bit more of the story, that individual had been irritating them for a long time. And where the group went wrong is they never provided feedback. Along the way, they never provided short amounts of feedback or little feedbacks along the way. And all of a sudden, they got fed up and they just blasted the person, blasted them out. And now it's a complete mess. So that, of course, is disconnection. If only that group of people had along the way created a relationship and lovingly and gently provided feedback, then none of it would have happened. Anyhow, more than this, in practice, guarding ourselves from disconnection, at certain points, temporarily, it might involve holding back and expressing negative emotions. If we're feeling angry, that's not the time. But as soon as we stop feeling angry and as soon as we've vented and we feel less angry inside, that's the time to express our emotions, to express our opinions, specifically for the sake of preserving and growing the relationship. The goal here of feedback, though, just to make it clear if it wasn't already, is not to manipulate somebody else or to get them to change. The goal is to strengthen our connection to other people. And if that's the goal, in our hearts, of really what we want ultimately is a relationship, then that will guide the process very well. There's some more fundamental issues to discuss, like what do we do when there's a conflict between interconnection and interpersonal connection? Is it ever appropriate to show anger or irritation? What do we do when we're feeling so irritated that we can't help and we're going to disconnect? So these are great questions, but in the interest of time, we're going to table them. And hopefully, over the course of today and next session, we're going to cover ground. Some of those questions are going to fall to the wayside. And if anything's residual or if other questions come up, then please write them in to David Greenberg by email. And I think everyone here has his email address. And we'll try to address them at the beginning of next session or the end of next session. Okay. Now let's talk about interpersonal connection part three, which is noticing our disconnection from others. This is the third part in the interpersonal connections segment of the workshop. We talked about noticing other people's needs as part one, providing for other people's needs and loving it as part two. And now we have part three, which is noticing when we disconnect from other people. Okay. So we discussed this earlier on today. When it comes to love and closeness, the standards of the connection paradigm are very, very different than Western culture. They're much higher. It's much finer. Are the level of love and the level of closeness that is that we have a challenge to achieve by the connections paradigm is much more than that in Western culture. Now, both systems agree that you shouldn't murder and you shouldn't punch someone else in the head. But according to the connections paradigm, it's also disconnection not to make full eye contact with people if they're irritating us. But by Western standards, there's nothing wrong. Sometimes it's even laudatory. It's like, ah, look, he didn't even make eye contact with him. Good, you got him. He got him. But that's not a connection standard, a connection's value. The reason is because we stated this earlier. Interpersonal disconnection is any behavioral manifestation of anger or irritation, regardless of how small. So anything that's observable, any comment, any gesture, if it's motivated by a desire to disconnect, to hurt the other person, then that's called disconnection. To clarify, disconnection occurs when we have a behavioral, though. It has to be a behavioral manifestation. The feelings in them themselves are not disconnection. If you're irritated and upset about something somebody did and you smile at them and go on, that is not disconnection. Just because you feel angry or feel irritated does not mean you're disconnected. It's behavioral manifestations of it which get in the way of that connection. Now, all of us on the line have had a lot of exposure to Western culture. We've probably, I hate to say it, but probably even had more exposure to Western culture than we have had to the connections paradigm. So the first step, therefore, in protecting ourselves against disconnection is to increase, and I said this before, to increase our sensitivity to disconnection, to recognize any behaviors at all that we might engage in that are motivated by irritation and anger. In this regard, we have to recognize, or we can recognize, is the opportunity that I'm presenting to you, that almost all of us regularly and habitually disconnect from other people. And it happens throughout the day, probably throughout every day. Sometimes it's in subtle ways, sometimes it's not so subtle ways, but disconnection is rife within our society as a whole and among us as individuals. I know for myself, there's no question that I disconnect many, many times from other people throughout the day. I'm embarrassed to say, but it's true. So the question to ask ourselves that this session is trying to convey is whether or not we disconnect, but how many times we disconnect. It's very, very rare that you have somebody who can fully share what's on their mind and also do so in a way that is loving, caring, kind. Most people, they either will share what's on their mind and be angry about it, or they won't share what's on their mind at all. Both of those are disconnection because we're letting an issue get in the way of the relationship. So the first question to ask is, how many times do we disconnect? Not whether we disconnect. So our new exercise, therefore, is to notice our disconnection from other people. And the challenge that I'd like to put up to you is to count the number of times every day that you engage in any behavioral manifestation of anger or irritation. If it's something that you're having eye contact with somebody and you look away because you're upset, that's one. If it's, of course, if it's something more serious, like you hit someone, God forbid, or yell at them, or speak badly about them behind their back, that's another. Hopefully nothing so egregious. Here's another one. When we have something to say to somebody and we're upset at them and we decide not to say anything because we're so upset. Now, that's a little tricky because if the goal is just to calm down and to wait until we're calm so that we can say something, I would probably let that go and not count it. But realistically, do we ever intend on saying something when we're upset? Are we really just catching our breath so that way we won't say it in a fit of anger and being able to have a conversation about them with them about the issue in a couple of hours or maybe a couple of days? If that's the goal, then okay. But mostly it's not. Usually when we don't speak to somebody about something that's on our mind, what we're doing is we're avoiding them and we're cutting them off, and that is called disconnection. That is a form of disconnection, to not say what's on our mind. Typically what happens in those cases, like I said, is the person doesn't say something, and it builds and builds and builds, and eventually they snap, which is the proof that it was disconnection all along. So that is the goal here. How many times a day? And whoever gets the most number, they win. No, I'm just kidding. But the goal here is to have high numbers, and I'll tell you why. It's not because I want you disconnecting throughout the day. Don't do it intentionally, of course. But I want you to be aware of how many times you do disconnect. There are many, many times, and it comes up a lot. And I want everybody here to be sensitized to it, to be more sensitized, and thereby to lower the threshold of disconnection. We want to aim for high numbers here. Okay, so on our chart, every day we are charting, whether we chart it or not, the chart box, we are charting exercise number 9, noticing our disconnection, and that is going to be a number. From 0 to, I don't know, 500, however many it is in a single day that you could possibly disconnect. Then we have exercise number 8, providing for other people's needs and trying to do it with a zing, with love. And then we have exercise number 7, which is noticing other people's needs that we currently do not have, needs that we currently do not have, noticing those needs. And that is session 9. Next time we're going to be moving on to session 10, which, believe it or not, is going to be wrapping up the module on interpersonal connection. And then after that, we're moving on to spiritual connection.